Our first case for argument on today's panel is 20-1319, Signature Systems versus American Express. Mr. Pennington? Feel free to take your mask off while you argue.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Edward Pennington. I'm for the appellant, Signature Systems. I'd like to start off with one concession, and that is the argument on page 14 of our blue brief that the CBM should not have been instituted. So we'll concede that argument. Now, I'd like to start off with a brief review of how we got here. This is a very unusual case. Our patent issued in 2013 as patent number 8423402, titled Method and System for Electronic Exchange of Reward Points. So just by the title alone, it tells you that this patent involves business methodology and software. Both of those have been allowed patentability by the Supreme Court and various panels and in-bank reviews of this court. But there was a case that came out in 2014 that everybody's familiar with called Alice Corbin v. CLS Bank, which seemed to give a lot more scrutiny to those kinds of patents. And indeed, for my client, there was a concern that the patent issued in 2013, Alice comes along in 2014, so it sort of cast a shadow on the patent. Nonetheless, in January of 2015, my client sued Amex for infringement in the Southern District of Florida on the 402 patent. Not long after the suit was filed, Signature filed a request for supplemental examination at the Patent Office, specifically to raise Alice as an issue. Even though the lawsuit was pending, we wanted this patent to be blessed, if you will, by the Patent Office because of the doubts raised by Alice. And that's what we did. Once we got into examination at the Patent Office, we didn't go back to the original examiner. We went to a panel of three re-exam experts.
Well, can I just ask, what is the point that you're building to by reciting this history?
I'm getting to the point that this patent has been scrutinized by the Patent Office, not just at the pre-grant level, but at the post-grant level.
And that, do you think, as a matter of law, should save you in this instance, that it shouldn't be reviewable again in this context, or that you should get some benefit of the doubt in this context? Where does that lead you?
To the benefit of the doubt, Your Honor. I don't believe that makes it dispositive, but it is instructive in terms of what is and what is not an abstract idea.
Well, do we have any cases that would support that legal proposition that if you've gone through an exam or a re-exam, you get a benefit of the doubt in a subsequent proceeding?
Your Honor, I've been on the other side of this issue where the patent owner said, oh, the issue came up at the examination level, and the district court said, no, that doesn't matter. We can review that all we want. And I agree that an examiner can make a mistake. It is a mistake if they issue that patent knowing that 35 U.S.C. 101 is out there. But in this case, I haven't found another case where there was a post-grant review. We have a CBM, and that's why we're here. But this was a request for supplemental examination, not by the original examiner. It's a panel. And they thoroughly reviewed the issue of...
Yes, but Congress came along and created the CBM review process by statute, allowed for there to be a preponderance of the evidence standard to be used in assessing evidence, and allowed a de novo re-evaluation of the patent. and all of that was done by Congress. How do you expect us to override Congress?
I don't expect you to override Congress, Your Honor. What I'm hoping is that the Fed Circuit will recognize how difficult it is to determine whether something is an abstract idea or not. And in fact, if you look at the Alice decision at the Federal Circuit, there was a myriad of decisions and thoughts about what it means and what to do with it.
Well, no, that's true. That's true of every 101 case. We've all struggled with how you define what the parameters of an abstract idea. So why don't you take us to this case and why you think there was error here in designating this as an abstract idea.
Okay. I think it comes down to currency exchange, Your Honor. The PTAB ruled in favor of petitioner because they said that this was nothing more than a currency exchange where you are using reward points. And that is, the PTAB said the claims were directed to the abstract idea of currency exchange through transferring and exchanging reward point data. Our point on that is reward points are not currency. And we argued at PTAB that it's a simple matter of definition that currencies are money, hard.
But is there, our case law says that it has to be a currency, and you're saying currency is only money? You can't be trading goods or some other?
But this was the basis for them deciding that this was an abstract idea.
So, but if you just call it private scrip, why is that not this? Private scrip is old too, like the green stamps.
It's a specific thing, Your Honor. These are reward points. So these are defined in the patent. The claim defines that there are two different types. And the claim defines that this is really about conversion of one type to another type. It's not currency exchange. And in order to do that, implicit in that is that I, the user, have to have an account with both places where the two different reward points reside.
Would you spend 30 seconds telling us what this claim does, what this claim says, what it's about?
It allows me to have an account with a bank like Visa. I can accumulate points with my Visa card, and I can also have an account with United Airlines. And in that account, I'm getting, let's say, miles. There's no standard conversion between miles and points, nor is there any standard conversion between...
And then what is the claim here? What is the inventive concept?
The claim here is that we were taking one type of point, we're converting it to the second type and putting it into the second account. So we're actually moving it, but not as fungible goods. We're not moving it as some reward points over here and moving it to some reward points over there. The claims all say that there has to be a predetermined conversion rate. And that's critical. That's decided.
And you're exchanging something of value for something else of value.
I'm not exchanging. I own all those points. I'm not exchanging the points within those two places. That's my account at the first place, my account at the second place. I'm just moving some of those from the first place to my second place, and they are now fungible because I've converted them. The exchange.
I'm sorry. How is that different from I have some euros and some dollars, and I don't have enough of either one to buy, you know, an American car or something, and so I go to an exchange and I exchange the euros for dollars, and now I have enough.
Okay.
Is that what's different?
I see a lot of difference, Your Honor. Number one, in a currency exchange, you have a rate that's established by the market. It's not established by me, and it's not established by the kiosk that's doing the exchange or the bank that's doing the exchange. Here, the companies that have my accounts establish a conversion rate. And when I exchange money, let's say I'm at Dulles Airport, and I come back from Japan and I want to take my Japanese money and turn it into dollars. I don't need an account with that kiosk. I don't need an account that's holding my Japanese money. I just go there and hand it to them, and they give me something back. So they are giving me something of theirs, whereas in this case, I'm giving something to myself at a conversion rate that was decided by the two businesses, the merchants that set
but
up
the
those
question
points.
Of whether something is directed to an abstract idea is largely one of law. And in this case, whether we labor over whether this is like a currency exchange or not, why don't we instead just say the abstract idea is pooling reward points from different programs using standard computer technology? Pooling reward points, that would be equally an abstract idea. And it is a question of law. We don't have to adopt the abstract idea as worded by the lower tribunal. If we want to word it differently, we can. Why is that not an appropriate view of your claim?
Again, one of the problems with the Alice analysis is that what you just did is what the examiner could have done in the initial examination. It's what the re-exam panel could have done post-grant.
Maybe we're paid more because we think better.
No, Your Honor, I hate to say it, but it's like beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I can make an abstract idea.
Yes,
out of
but in this case, we're the beholder.
You
right?
Are?
We review it de novo. We review all of these things de novo. So whether an examiner thought it to be okay or not is not relevant, given that my standard of review is de novo.
Right, but the example that you just gave, Your Honor, just left out a lot of information about what the claim actually says. The claim talks about two different types of reward points.
Well, and I talked about pooling reward points from different programs. What
pooled,
does that leave out?
They're not pooled unless they are converted. So you're leaving out a huge, important step. So maybe that's part of step two analysis, where we talk about, well, what did we do to transform this into something that's patent eligible? Then you can talk about the other language in that claim. And Your Honor, you look at claim one, it goes on for two pages. It is there is a lot of detail in that claim. There's nothing abstract about it in the first place. But if there is, then you go into the claim and look for what's being done there. And that's what's not being done as a, here's where you run into
Do you think if this were properly described as pooling reward points from different programs, that would not be an abstract idea?
That's not what the claims say, though, Your Honor. So, again,
that was not my question.
It's a no, because, again, these points are not pooled.
It's a no, I'm sorry. You think that would not be an abstract idea, or you just think that's not the one that fits these claims?
It may be an abstract idea. It may be. But again, this goes to the problem. This is why we brought up the fact that we had a post-grant review already. There are so many ways of different people look at things differently.
You're into your rebuttal time. Do you want to save any?
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Then let's hear from Mr. Vandenberg. We didn't realize how few people there would be, how far away you are. If you would like to take off your masks, we are fine with that, but it's your preferences in the audience. If you want to take them off, you can. You don't have to take them off. Please make your own choices. Yeah, I figured that would happen. Most people do that. They're hard to wear them. Okay, Mr. Vandenberg, please proceed.
May it please the Court, I'd like to address the three issues that were just raised in order: the reexamination certificate, the issue of currency, and then the claims. In terms of the reexamination certificate, one point on that is that it issued 7 years ago in 2015. That was before most of this Court's precedent. It was before CX Loyalty decision, which we consider to be on all fours. It was before Electric Power Group, which also is relevant here.
Okay, but even if it had issued a year ago, you wouldn't be agreeing that somehow collateral estoppel applied, would you?
Oh, absolutely not. Right. It could have been issued yesterday and analyzed every single part of this Court. It's still not collateral estoppel because for obvious reasons.
Well, what are those obvious reasons?
Well, the obvious reason is that Congress presumably had something in mind, and whether it's one examiner in the original examination or three examiners in a reexamination, still Congress said that patent is subject to post-grant review by administrative law judges through a very, you know, set standard. And those judges here did their job, whether it was CBM that sunsetted or IPR or post-grant review. That's the whole point. Congress wanted the PTAB and then this court on review to take a second look at patents and make sure there weren't monopolies out there, possibly hindering innovation on abstract ideas.
Well, Mr. Pennington's argument was, would they did take a second look. They took a first look and they granted the patent, then they took a second look and they allowed the patent again. So this is really a third look. Do you think Congress intended there to be 3, 4, 5, 6 looks? How many looks do you think Congress intended?
At least one look by administrative law judges. And this was the first look by the administrative law judges, the patent judges on the PTAB. And clearly a stop, the board cannot be stopped by what the examiners do. The board are not a party, a litigant. I learned in law school 42 years ago, in a law school not as nice as this, that collateral estoppel bars parties, not tribunals.
If in the original application or on the re-exam, there had been a rejection and it went to court and the PTO was a party in court, would that change anything?
We would say no, that still would not collaterally stop American Express, the petitioner who is...
I think you said that the board, which is to say the PTO, can't be stopped because it wasn't a party before, and it's true that's true in this case, but it's easy to imagine a case in which the PTO was a party in the judicial proceeding in case number one, had it been rejected and signature had gone to court, the PTO would have been the other side of that case.
I would submit that still there'd be no collateral estoppel. This is the patent is a public right, although they're technically the patent office is a party. They're not.
There would be mutuality. This has nothing to do with your argument that there's a statutory override in the CBM system.
No, understood. A government can certainly be collaterally stopped if they're a party to, say, to a state litigation or federal litigation. That is true. But here I would argue there'd be an exception because this is a public right and the Patent Office did not really have a controversy. They did not really have sort of Article III standing. They were there because they issued the patent, but it is the public, such as American Express, that has the true controversy. So I would say the government would not be stopped there. Also, the reexamination certificate was a superficial analysis we submit. They did not consider or perhaps have the American Express rewards program that in 1995 it did exactly what these claims do, but by telephone. So American Express allowed a user to exchange American Express reward points, say, for Delta reward points.
That goes to an obviousness question. That's not an eligibility.
What we submit, Your Honor, it goes to both. It goes to the eligibility because it shows the fact that the same thing was done without a computer shows that this is not an internet-centric or computer-centric alleged invention, which we submit is relevant on Alice.
Do you think any economic practice that existed at the time of an application, if you just say do it on a computer, that creates a 101 problem, or is there some significance to the language Alice used about a fundamental economic practice?
We would submit the former, and the reason is that economic practices are simply inherently intangible. Here, for instance, reward points are doubly intangible. They're numbers, and the numbers represent legal obligations. So they're doubly abstract. And whether the same idea, if this idea deserved a Nobel Prize in economics, or if this idea was done 200 years ago, we submit wouldn't matter to that analysis. Is it essentially something that you could call it a mental process, a way of organizing human endeavors, economics, whatever it is, it's not a technological invention. And this record here is replete with admissions that there was no technological improvement.
What about your friend's argument that this is not currency and it was called currency?
First point on that is that the board itself said it doesn't matter if it's called currency. On the appendix 42, in their opinion, after they determined it was currency, they said, and in any event, it doesn't matter if you call it currency. And they cited Electric Power Group, in which the court said that the content of the information, the specific content of the information, does not change its nature as information. That was in Electric Power Group being analyzed and displayed. And the board relied on that in this case and said, even if it's not currency, it doesn't matter because you're simply exchanging, essentially, not the board's words, one set of numbers for another set of numbers. In addition, it is a form of currency. It's not public currency you can go to Europe on, but it is a form of currency, and I invite the court's attention to the specification at column 10, line 20, where it says that the user, quote, basically treat the points as cash consideration, close quote. Cash consideration sounds a lot like currency. In addition, as the board found, this exchange points can be used to buy and sell products, and there's an exchange rate. So that's the point on currency.
Can I ask you a question outside of the record, just for my own interest, because I haven't been following it? The CBM program expired.
It sunsetted in 2020.
Any discussion, any reason? Do we have any legislative history that would indicate why it did? Did somebody think it was a success, or did somebody think it wasn't working right or was unnecessary? Just outside of the record, if you have any information about that, I'm curious.
Well, I would say there's a branch of government that's not as effective as the judicial branch, and there may have been concern that they would not be able to get a new law passed to renew the CBM program. It was initially instituted to have this 7-year sunset, which presumably was a compromise, presumably between financial services, bank, you know, lobbyists, and interested legislators. So they sunsetted it, but I think, you know, the concept of getting a new patent, any patent law development through Congress is a dicey proposition. I don't know anything more specific than that.
Thank you.
In terms of the claims, counsel referred to conversion. Well, the claims do not refer to any conversion. There's no data structure conversion in these claims. What the claims essentially are, using our example of Citibank and Delta that we had in our briefs, are exchanging Citibank reward points for Delta reward points and doing it on the web. The web components here are completely generic. They admitted to the board there was no argument that there was a technological improvement. In the blue brief, they concede there is no argument that there's technological improvement. Column 5 of the specification says that any type of reward server will do. Any type of exchange server.
Mr. Pennington placed some emphasis on the predetermined rate for the implicit conversion. What do you make of that?
That's a pure abstraction, that you get one Delta point for one Citibank point. One could do that in their head. One could do it in pencil and paper. There's no improvement to computers or to technology or software. This is not a software patent. It's not a computer improvement patent. It's not NPAT. This is CX loyalty. And you know, the gist of our argument is that in CX loyalty, the claims were patent ineligible because they merely replaced a human intermediary with generic web components to redeem exchange points. Here, the claims are patent ineligible because they merely replace a human intermediary with generic web components to exchange reward points. It's the same case there. In CX loyalty, they noted there was no improvement to the computers. Here, the record shows that in spades. And a final point, it's a pretty trivial point, but counsel indicated that these claims go on for 2 pages. The claims in Electric Power Group, I believe, were 238 words. I looked it up once. But in any event, they were probably longer than these claims here.
Anything further?
No questions.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Pennington, you have some rebuttal time.
Your Honor, going back to what is the magistrate idea, and also what the role of this court is. When you review what the PTAB did, is your role to review what they said and decide whether that was correct or not? Or is it, do you have the ability to reform what the idea is?
Well, we've certainly done that.
Well, if that's the case, then I will go back to what the PTAB said. PTAB said that this was an abstract idea, a fundamental economic practice of currency exchange. So this is not an argument. This is what they ruled on. They said this was a currency exchange. The PTAB has the ability, and the parties have the ability, to do claim construction.
Did you ask for one here?
They did not, Your Honor. Oh. They could have asked for a construction of currency to equate to reward points. They did not. So they left it up to us to point out that these are not reward, that's not currency. And we pointed to dictionary definitions and just standard practice. We know what currency is, and reward points are not currency. They mentioned the Amex Rewards program and how if the Patent Office had that when they did the post-grant review, it might have been different. But they had it, Your Honor. We submitted that in an IDS. So that rewards program that they referred to was before the three members of the panel that decided the request for a supplemental examination. So that was there. My friend mentioned that reward points are doubly intangible. That is exactly the opposite of what a currency is. So he just admitted that reward points can't be currency because currency is not intangible. It's got a value. And it's not fixed by the participants in this program. It's fixed by a separate market.
You're out of time. Do you have a closing thought?
I close by saying I'm happy to be here. I've never been to Villanova, and I appreciate your effort to be here as well.
Thank you. Thank both counsel. This case is taken under submission.